Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Contract Revolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. Today, we're having a conversation with Matt Reisinger about all things team building. Now, before he created his million plus subscriber YouTube channel dedicated to all things building science, Matt worked as a recruiter for a national builder where he learned the tactics and skills he would use to assemble his incredible teams at both Reisinger Build, his custom home building company, and The Build Show, his media production company. Now we're going to talk about top of funnel recruitment tactics, how to get great applicants in the door, behavioral interviewing, and how to ask the right questions. We'll talk about how to retain talent for the long haul and how to know when to let someone go. This is an absolute masterclass in human resources for construction and trades businesses with one of the most trusted names in the industry. Matt, as always, was a great podcast guest. So without further ado, let's dive in.
You're listening to Contractor Evolution, where we unpack the systems, tactics, and skills you need to take your fast-growing contracting business to the next level.
If you're here to learn what it takes to scale up, work less, and increase profitability, you've come to the right place.
Stay tuned to learn what separates the new breed of contractor from the old school, and welcome to your ultimate guide on the business of contracting.
Matt Reisinger, you're a friend of the show now. Welcome back, my friend.
Benji, appreciate you having me, brother. Always fun to be on the Contract Revolution podcast.
So a lot of people, most people know you from your YouTube, from The Build Show, from all the stuff you do online, but I don't think that many people know kind of the background. And this is a great setup for the conversation that we're going to have today. You have spent years in kind of like the construction HR world. You've done a whole bunch of team building, both for Reisinger Build and then for The Build Show as well. Can you maybe just paint a bit of a picture for the listener, like to talk about your years in that human resources section of a business and what you learned?
Yeah, for sure, Benji. So I got my start at a big national builder right out of college. Spent a couple years learning the business as an assistant superintendent and then a superintendent. And they recruited me to the HR recruiting team at corporate. And this was a big builder that hired, 100 or so new assistant superintendents every year. And so we had a 4 or 5 man recruiting team that was one of the best jobs I did in my career because it's helped me so much as I've owned a business and later in my career. But of course, I didn't know that at the time. I just thought, oh, this is really fun as I'm transitioning from for a while I was single, and then I did it after I was married. I was traveling, 4 or 5 days a week to different universities because we were hiring people right out of school. I was going to some of our divisions to help hire people locally. I learned a ton during that time. And then fast forward a couple of years when I started my company, it was like, man, I feel really jazzed about my first couple hires because I felt like this is an area of expertise is, how do I find good people? So in terms of establishing my bona fides, yes, I've owned a company for 19 years, but really it was a couple years working in that HR recruiting department that I think set me up for success when it comes to this topic we're talking about today.
And it really has. I mean, I don't want to overstate this you've built, Reisinger Build is now, I think, like an 8-figure contracting business in Austin that you are largely or entirely kind of a passive owner in. That's right. Yeah. I mean, so that's really a testament to that. And then you've taken those skills and also built a completely different business too, which is now a media company that has an online platform akin to Netflix, but for construction nerds, as I like to call it.
That's the idea.
So there's clearly some lessons that you've picked up along the way that you're using a lot. And I think I'll just set context for our audience. What we're going to do today, guys, we're going to go through sort of 4 sections, if you will, that all connect to team building. So one would be recruitment and that more top of funnel activity that you do to get good applicants in the first place. Then we'll talk a little bit about interviewing and sort of that selection process near the bottom of the funnel. We'll talk a little bit about retention and like keeping your key players for the long term. And then I think no conversation about team building would be complete without a few notes on firing and getting rid of people too, because that is part of the equation as well.
Team unbuilding.
What's that?
T- Team Unbuilding.
Team Unbuilding. Team Unbuilding. So let's start at this top of funnel part of it, Matt. There's this great line from a really, really interesting, he owns a huge recruitment agency in Toronto. He's come on a couple times. His name's Asad. And he has this great quote. I don't know if it's his, but I like it. He says, "You will always make a bad hire if you have no one good to choose from." And that, when you think about it, it's like, that's not a super profound statement. We all know that, but it's so clean and clear. And it reminds me of this fact that if you're really just scraping the bottom of the barrel with applicants in the first place, you're dead in the water and nothing else that we talk about really matters. So at a very, very high level to start, Matt, like, what is your philosophy on generating good applicants?
All right, let me back up a minute by saying that one thing that I think has made me successful is when I've identified over the years somebody who's come to me, then I thought, you know, they would make a fantastic project manager, or whatever the job was. We've always been quick to hire people sometimes before we needed them. And that's actually been a big strength of ours. You know, we've always had a bit of a social media presence. And people have noticed us as a builder and as a good place to work. And so I would say that even when I was a fairly no-name builder, right, I was writing a blog for a while. I had a Facebook page. You know, we're talking about 100 subscribers, 100 followers type thing. If I had somebody that come to me that was what I felt like was a superstar or someone who I thought was going to be really excellent at a job, sometimes I would basically create the position for them and then figure out how to get the business that would justify that. And I can think of that in particular as I was in the first 5 to 10 years of construction, owning my business. Almost all of my project manager, builder hires, for lack of a better term, were people that came to me and I was like, wow, this person's fantastic. Mm. I should figure out how to hire them and pay them and get the work to make sure that I've got this excellent person on staff. So for me, you know, I've hardly ever over the years had to put anything on a website that's, hey, we're hiring, you know, send us your application kind of thing. Hmm. And so I actually contribute that back to having some amount of social media presence. And I talk about this a lot when I talk to contractors in a big group to say, you know, forget about just finding prospects. Your social media is also a terrific way to find people that you want to work with. And that's absolutely been the case for me. And so that's why I think companies need to stop thinking of social media as another form of their website, you know, just putting pretty pictures up there. And every builder has great pictures from a pro photographer that they can put on social media. But instead, people want to know what it's like to work at your business. What are you like as a business owner? Would I like building what you're building and building with you? And for me, that's been a big key to my success, was being able to find those people who came to me organically.
I think that social media, and I'd say Instagram in particular as a tool, is actually way better built as a recruitment thing than an advertising thing. And there's a whole bunch of there's a whole bunch of reasons for that. It's a very human platform, and just in terms of the content that ends up there, like the pictures people take, what the algorithm sort of favors. And so if you think of the human part of a construction business, that is the employees for the most part, and it's a way better place to sort of commemorate, acknowledge, put on a pedestal to some degree your staff. For the sake of recruitment and what I would call employer brand building. Oh, and by the way, you get the added benefit of that also works for customers as well. So I've been saying this for years, and it's something that I think a lot of our BT members do a great job of, is really, really capturing the human side of the business on social media. I'm curious, yep. Over the years working with this national builder, did you ever learn what kind of effective, like, outbound tactics have you learned from that? Because yes, we can just post something on a job site and have it sit there, and we do kind of the post and pray strategy. And depending on where, how tight the labor market is, you will have varying degrees of success. So there are things that you can do to make your job postings more appealing. We can talk about those. But at the end of the day, it's a very passive tactic. What active tactics have you found to be successful?
I've got a couple for you, but I want to preface them by saying I'm not advocating poaching when I get into telling you a few of these ideas, but merely these are ideas to find interested people that might be at a competitor, maybe not. So let me say that first. So when I was in HR, this is kind of a fun story. My VP of HR came to me and said, "Hey, we need a new front desk person. The person who like answers the switchboard here at corporate." And this was a builder that was building something stupid, $750 million a year in annual revenue or something crazy. We were in the top 10. And our CEO, the chairman of the board, this person at the front desk who answered the phone in corporate was kind of his secretary in some respects. Like they had to have a good relationship. And so my boss said, "Here's the top 50 companies in this area. I want you to call them. And whoever answers the phone, I want you to say, 'Hey, I know this is crazy, but we're looking for I guess we called the job like a head receptionist or a head whatever. Do you know anyone who might be interested?' And of course, they're answering the phone. That's them that we're interested in. But we're not saying like, 'Do you want a job?' We're saying, 'Do you know anyone who might be interested in a job like that?' And so I literally went down the list of the top 50 companies, and they weren't builders. They were just big companies. And wouldn't you know it, I talked to this lady named Darlene one time. She was who knows where on the list. She was super nice. I could tell right away that I would like her and my CEO would like her. And she said, "Yeah, actually, I might know somebody. Give me your number and I'll have them call you." Right. So I give her my number and she calls me, at like 5:30 that night. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, it's so great to talk to you. Yeah, I feel like it's time for me to move on. This has happened at the workplace. And so I know you weren't calling for me, but I'd be interested in the job." I was like, "Yeah, I wasn't calling for you, but sure, right?" And we ended up hiring Darlene. And I swear I became the CEO's like best friend for that week because he loved her. And she ended up staying long after I left and was still there for, a decade or two beyond that. She was a terrific hire. And I'd like to say that was me, that it was my boss giving me this list and saying, "Here's what you do." And, we actually use that strategy in the field occasionally, too, where, for instance, we started a new division in Cleveland, Ohio. And my boss said, "I want you to drive around to job sites and talk to people and say, 'Hey, we're moving here as a builder. We're looking for good superintendents. Here's my business card. If you know of anybody, give us a call.'" And sure enough, we got three or four great people that way by making that. But the other way to do it is the same way that you find good subcontractors. And this is not any secret, but when you need a good finish carpenter, who do you call? Well, you call the supply houses, you call Fine Lumber, you call Builders First Source, you ask who the great carpenters are. You can do the exact same thing for finding a really good field, just about any field position that would be an in-house position. Call those same people that are your trusted trades, that work around town, that know people, and say, "Hey, we're looking to hire another carpenter. We're looking to hire another project manager. We're looking to hire another whatever. Do you know of anybody out there that's good and might be interested?" And whether it's them personally that's the right person that you might be hiring, or whether it's their buddy or somebody they know, it's that referral network, and that job never goes on. It's not Monstro.com. What's the common?
Indeed is really popular.
Indeed, yeah. There you go. It never goes on Indeed. It never goes on your website. There's no disclosure that you have an opening. It's you just making that uncomfortable phone call to a couple people and getting out of your comfort zone. And I suppose if you had to, you could text people or email people, but I think a phone call is definitely the way to go. So I'd highly recommend that. And frankly, I like that a lot better than hiring a recruiter. And no shade to recruiters, but recruiters want 25 or maybe 50% of their annual salary. And I've had recruiters in the past kind of do some not so shady or not so upright tactics by saying, "Hey, I'm calling on behalf of Matt Reisinger, and we're looking to hire somebody." And, they're calling my direct competitor.
Yeah.
Who then goes to their boss. And one time I had one of my direct competitors call me and he was super mad, dropped several swear words, And I thought of this guy as like the pinnacle, the older brother, the like he's made it. And I would have never done that, but this recruiter did it like on my behalf. And I had major egg in my face. To this day, I think this guy still hates me because this recruiter was calling and trying to recruit somebody from my competitor. Because I'm sure I said at some point, like, you know, the kind of company that, you know, the kind of person that has this or this or this on their resume is somebody I'd want. Well, they took that as a charge to do what I did as a recruiter and basically say, are you looking for a job? But instead of just saying, are you looking for a job? They said, hey, Matt Reisinger's hiring.
Yeah, yeah.
And would you be interested in working for him?
Well,
so
there's
be smart about it and don't try and poach.
Well, there's a finer point here I think we need to make on this. Whether it is getting a list of other businesses and making those phone calls, whether it is stopping in at a job site and talking to trades or workers or whomever is there, whether it be at a lumberyard, how do we do this in such a way that is above board, that does not come off as sleazy, that does not come off as poaching? Because look, I mean, like, the economy is a big place, and yeah. You know, we live in a free country, and people absolutely have the right and, in fact, the responsibility to do what's right for them and navigate their own career. And that does mean sometimes moving from place to place. So that's a fact. But at the same time, there's also the thing that you just described, which is you can do this in a way that really leaves a bad taste in people's mouth and is really, you
for
know,
sure.
I don't know if I would say unethical, but it's moving towards the sleazy
verge.
End of the spectrum. So an energy thing? Is it the words that we use? Is it the offers that we make? How do we do this in a way that's right?
I think the way to do it right is by thinking about your partners in your success. And for me, that's, you know, a lot of times that's my framer, my painter, my electrician, my plumber, my lumber salesperson, and using the phone and calling them and saying, hey, I'm looking for this position. Do you know of anybody who comes to mind that you think that might be really good at that position, who might be interested in working for me, whether they have a job or not, and letting it happen, right? I mean, if that electrician feels like there's a good person that works at another business and hasn't been treated well or had an absolutely terrible experience with the customer and wanted to move or whatever it was, well, that's on them and that's not sleazy. You're not calling them and saying, hey, do you want to come work for me? You're letting your trusted partner figure it out. And most of the time it's not, I mean, especially if you're in a big town, it's not usually your competitors. I can think of maybe one time that's happened. Mm. Most of the time it's companies that you don't think of. It's people that you wouldn't know otherwise. So I think that's the way to do it, is thinking about who are the people that are invested in your success and would want good people to work at your company. And telling them, hey, we're looking for this. Do you know anybody? You know, for instance, one time we were looking for an office manager, somebody to kind of play a role of bookkeeping / a couple other roles. And so I literally called all the offices of all my trusted trades and said, hey, we're looking for this position. And I found somebody fantastic through that network referral. So that's, I think using your contacts is always going to be better than putting it on Indeed.
A huge part of the workforce of a typical construction or trades business is in many cases subcontracted. What have you found useful to find any lessons over the years on building out a really great, solid, values aligned, they do high quality, the reliable roster of subcontractors for your business?
Gosh, this is probably a whole nother podcast in its own, because there's so much to unpack there. But I'll give you the kind of high level version, since this is 25% of the podcast, not the entire podcast. You know, for me, I spent a ton of time when I was early in the business talking to people, asking people for that referral to somebody good in that area. And since then, I've spent a lot of time training and retaining them to make sure that they continue to be good and trusted trades. And as a result, now that I've been business just shy of 20 years, I've got several trades that have been with me since my very first job. And then I've got probably the majority of my trades who have been with me for more than a decade.
Wow.
And for me, that's huge. You know, I I think we've talked about this in the past, that I'm a relatively hands-off builder because I mainly spend my time in my video production company, and I probably only spend 10% of my time in my building company. It's because I still have the same trades out there that have been working for me for a decade that I've been in the field with multiple times, and we've spent time training and talking about things. They know what my expectations are. My project managers have high expectations as well. And when you meet those expectations, it's assumed that you're going to do the next job for us. We don't bid things out to multiple bidders. We generally talk to our trades about an annual, what's your rate going to be this year? Do you need an increase? Can you stay the same? And for the most part, we've been able to keep the same trades on the jobs time after time after time. And that's really a huge benefit for me because I'm not on the job every day, but I know who the tile guy is, and I know who the framer is, and I know who the electrician's going to be. And they look out for us just like we look out for them. So that's been a huge part of my success. And I suspect that there's probably a whole podcast in us in the future to talk about that.
For sure. Someone could write a book on it. let's move down the funnel and talk a little bit about like interviewing and in this stage where we're actually looking at candidates for whatever roles we have. Now, one of the spots that business owners find themselves in if they do a good job of the stuff we just talked about is, and this is a good problem to have, by the way, you have more applicants, obviously, than you can certainly hire and even interview. So there does need to be a bit of a filter there. And people would know this as sort of resume scanning. What have you learned? What are you looking for? How do you do this efficiently? If you've got 100 resumes in an inbox somewhere for a given position, and you'd love to interview 20 of them and pare that down to, 5 second interviews and then one ultimate hire. Take us through the steps to kind of do that very efficiently, get the wrong people out, the right people in, and keep the whole process flowing. What are you looking for?
Yeah, so a couple things. Resumes are kind of a cool, quick filter because I like that you don't typically have someone's video or picture on a resume. And so you're able to kind of take an objective look at, is this the type of person I want, rather than saying, does this person look like me? All right. Whether you're a white old guy like me or whether you're whatever race or gender, I think we tend to think about people that look like the last person that did that job, no matter who that person was. And resumes are kind of fun because they get rid of all that. And they say, what I see when I see your resume is this the kind of person that I'm looking for? And for me, one of the biggest things I'm looking for is somebody who's oriented towards achievement. And so when I look at a resume, the first thing I scan for is, do they look like they're results oriented? And when I was a college recruiter and was looking at 100 resumes in 30 minutes, multiple times a week, it was really easy to tell from these college kids who was results oriented and who wasn't. And for me, it wasn't so much what the results were, but the fact that they were results oriented. And so, you could quickly scan through a resume and go, have they had any leadership positions? Did they say at all that when they started at that builder that they went from this percent profit to that percent profit, or they went from this customer success to that customer success rating by whatever metric that happened to be? You really want people that are oriented towards results, not just oriented to, I showed up for this period of time and I get a star for attendance.
So let me make sure I understand this. Because look, every resume is going to say somewhere in that opening blurb, I'm a results oriented, blah, 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 whatever, right? So you're not looking at that. You're not even necessarily looking at the section where it says, like, I spent, this year to this year at ABC Builder and then this year to this year at XYZ Builder. You're almost looking at the sub bullet points underneath to
see. That's exactly right.
Like, and you use good examples. In this time as project manager, I drove an average gross profit of 40% on every single project I oversaw. In my time as an office manager, I was able to, I don't know, reduce accounts receivable by this much. Like, it's the yes. devil's in the details. Is that kind of, can you say more about what it is you're zooming in on and looking for when you say I'm looking for results orientation?
Yeah, actually, I'm gonna pull forward and then come back for a second. You know, when they come in for an interview, what I'm gonna say to them is I want to interview them to find out what their past behavior was, to assume that their past behavior will predict their future behavior. And something that I learned as a recruiter was this thing that we call the STAR method. I think this is pretty common in the kind of interviewing world. The STAR method was, when I ask you a question about your past, I'm looking for you, Mr. Candidate, to answer the question with this STAR method. I want you to tell me the situation or task that was at hand, the action you took, and the result that happened there. So rather than asking a theoretical question, what would you do if XYZ happened on your job? You know, what would you do if, a subcontractor didn't show up? No. Don't ask that question. The question is, tell me about a time when you had a subcontractor under your job that was particularly bad at coming when you needed them. Tell me about the situation. Tell me about the action you took, and tell me about the result. Because you want them to tell you about a time 2 years ago when Bill the electrician was having marital problems and was having a hard time getting the job. But here's how you incentivized him. Here's how you got him to be reliable for you. And this was the result on that, was we were able to finish that job, but then we didn't. But then we fired him when we got done and we moved to a different subcontractor or whatever it is. We want to get good actions to predict future actions. And you can get a sense for that on the resume if they've done a relatively good job of being action and results oriented. And if they're not action or results oriented, you're only going to get dates. I'm looking for someone who says, I was superintendent of the year 3 out of the 5 years I was with this production builder. Or like you mentioned, my jobs consistently had less than 3% variance over the course of the 4 years that I built homes for this builder, whatever the metrics or numbers are. I think we can easily get snowed by this person's looks like me. This person was the captain of the football team, whatever it is, when we really need results oriented people. And then we need those metrics that are important for that particular role. And we're talking about, superintendents, just because that's kind of near and dear to my heart, but that could be office manager. That could be, whatever role you're hiring for.
Matt, why does experience sometimes betray us? Have you thought about that question before? When you look at, someone can have experience, observable, measurable experience on a resume and still be a total moron. I mean, let's be honest. Have you thought about why that is?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think that, for the most part, 90% of the people that are going to apply for the job are either not qualified and you should absolutely assume that you're not going to hire them. If you're building a business and you're an entrepreneur, you need not just people on the bus to sit in the seat, but you need people that are going to really knock that job out of the park. If you're a small business, if you're running Microsoft, you can afford to have 30% of your staff be not that good at their job. But anybody who's listening to this podcast is an organization that's probably less than 30 people or maybe as many as 50 people, right? But you probably don't have a whole lot of BTA people that are 150 people on their team.
No.
If you have 150 people on your team, probably there's 20 that aren't very good and you haven't fired them.
Businesses,
but if you're
the size.
I have 17 people on my team. I cannot afford somebody who's not top performer.
I didn't mean to interrupt you there. I was going to say businesses the size of our listeners can afford very, very little dead weight. Like they just don't have the P&L the size that they would need to have a bunch of pretty average people hiding out. I have an answer to my own question, which is I think
let's hear it.
The economy is a big place, and I think that we sometimes in the small business environment, when we're running these lean, overhead light, like we're cagey business owners that run these really, for the most part, pretty efficient, pretty fast moving, dynamic businesses. You don't actually realize out there in the bigger world how many nooks and crannies and sort of hiding places there is for mediocrity. There's way more than you think. And I think that's why experience sometimes can trick us. You look at something, you say, well, this person's done they have the experience that I'm looking for. They've done it for 10 years. They may have just done it wrong for 10 years, or they may have just done it poorly for 10 years. The fact that they did it for 100%. 10 years it means something, but it's in no way, shape, or form a guarantee that they will be a rock star for the thing that you're hiring them to do. So I just think that's an important point about, I mean, it's sort of become a bit of a cliche. I hire for personality, not experience, but it's worth unpacking the why behind it.
And I can give you on that point real quick before you move on. I think it's vital for a business owner to think about what are the things that make this person or make this role successful. And since we were talking about project manager, I pulled mine up real quick. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 7 things that we think here at my company that make a successful project manager: their energy, their planning organization, their frustration tolerance, their team orientation, their persuasiveness, their human relations skills, and their adaptability. And so when we're interviewing, we're looking at those things, and we also have a pre-employment test that tests for those things that we think of as a third or fourth interviewer. It's not a break or break test. We don't hire them if they do well and don't hire them if they do poorly, but it allows us to go, okay, this person's low on energy, but is good on plan organization and team orientation or whatever it is. How does that work in real life, and do we want them on the team?
I love those 7, especially frustration tolerance. That's a funny way to put it.
It's really important in our business,
isn't it? Probably the most important thing. How do you, given those things, and maybe we can just play around with this project management example, but you can, of course, extrapolate this to any role and any list of strengths that you're looking for. How do you, Matt, like frame interview questions effectively? And if you want to answer it in the inverse, you could just describe, tell us what not to do when it comes to structuring interview questions in a way that gets the most data, gets the most insight out of the applicant.
Yeah, I mentioned it briefly earlier, but it's that STAR method. I don't want any hypotheticals. What I really want is real world examples of what you've done on the job. And I mentioned those work behaviors, but something I haven't mentioned yet is ability. You know, one of the abilities I'm looking for, or probably the biggest ability I'm looking for, is problem analysis and judgment, often referred to as critical and logical thinking. I want people that are really good at thinking critically and logically. You know, as a custom builder, everything that I build has never been built before. As a production builder, you're following a recipe and you're making a McDonald's hamburger. But as a custom builder, if you don't have good critical and logical thinking, if you don't have good problem analysis and can make good judgments on the job, you're not going to be successful in that job for me. So that's the ability I'm looking for. And then the work behaviors are what feeds that kind of engine, so to speak. That's the gasoline that goes into the engine. So when I'm looking for people in whatever job, I'm looking to see, okay, I need a high horsepower engine here. Let's dig into what they've done in the past and let's find out about their judgment and their ability to think critically. So that means I'm going to ask them questions that say, okay, tell me about a time when you had way too much work to do and you had to figure out how to get it all done. Tell me about the situation that you were under. Why was that an issue that you were overworked or you were whatever? Tell me about the actions you took and what was the result. So as a student, that might be, you know, I had this many class loads, I had this big class load, and I was working part-time, full-time. As a adult that you're interviewing, that's, you know, I had this one time where I had 5 houses under construction at the same time. And you're probing them to find out, you know, was it you had 5 houses under construction one time because you were too late on the last 3 and they took 18 months to build when they should have taken 12 months? Or, you know, what was the situation even that got them into that? And then how did they get out of it? Did they get out of it by hiring someone? Maybe that's a good answer. Maybe not. You got to figure that out. But what you're looking to do is say, okay, are these people, is this person in front of me, able to use really good critical and logical thinking skills. And we can all think of people that don't have good critical and logical thinking skills, and they're probably only good at one or two different specific types of jobs. They're probably not real good at being a project manager.
I have on this critical thinking slash problem solving bit, I have a personal core value, and the people that work with me closely know this. It's called use your brain. And I have like less than zero patience for non-critical thinkers because there's too, yeah. there's too much going on. Like I can't like figure it out. Like that is truly my answer to a lot of things. You're smart. You have That's this right. incredible, you know, however many billions of synapses up there and all this gray matter and this oxygen flowing to it, it's sitting there. Use it. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, yes. then this isn't going to work for very long. Because I've got, you know, we everyone on our team, and this is true of any sort of really business at any level, we all have our own list of problems that we're trying to work through. And yes, there's coaching and there's collaboration and we're there to support each other for sure. But if all you're getting is a steady stream of, I don't know how, can you help me? What should I do here? Type questions. Not only are your projects going to go sideways, you're going to be absolutely freaking exhausted. You know, there's this really great little coaching thing that we share at Breakthrough Academy. We didn't invent it, but it's worth repeating. If you're really struggling with problem solving with people on your team, there's this really great thing called the three questions. So anytime somebody in your business comes to you with an issue, you ask them first, what's the root problem? Like, what is the actual core issue here? Because most of the time they're just venting and they're upset and now they're kind of wasting your time too. So you get them thinking through the root problem. You say, what are, in your professional opinion, what are three potential options here? And you get them thinking more and they give you three. Awesome. One of them will be good. And then you say, if I were stuck on a desert island and you couldn't reach me, which of the three would you pick? And they pick one. You say, great, go do that. And if you just do that over and over and over again, people do slowly start to learn. It's something that you can work on. But anyway, a few thoughts on critical thinking, man. It's really hard when it's not there.
For sure.
So
100%.
Hey, here's a question. What about entry-level jobs? What about like entry-level labor? A lot of people wonder, I think in the construction space, sometimes people wonder, well, you know, like I pay this person to dig ditches, to use the cliche. Like, is a baseline entry level laborer type person on a job site someone that you would still interview, or do you ever entertain the approach of just, I'm going to chuck someone on the job site and see how they do?
No, I would never do that.
No,
because if they're going to wear a logo, they're representing your brand. And we even feel like, you know, the guy who's the laborer on the job site needs to be whoever's eyes and ears are not there. Right. So if the project manager scheduled somebody to be on the job site as a laborer who works for us, right, who's our person, they're there to go, oh my gosh, the inspector's here and no one else is here. Let me go greet Mike and find out if he needs somebody. You know, is there an issue? Should I call the plumber to get here for the job? Is there a delivery? Do I need to sign for that? Do you know where that goes? You know, whatever it is, you need people that are representing you as the builder. And if they're going to wear your brand or your logo, you need to have the right person on the job, not just a body on the job to fulfill that job. So I always think you're better off waiting to hire the correct person than hiring the okay person who's going to fill that. Because it's really hard to fire someone who's been okay for 6 months when you could have waited another month or two. And I'm probably segueing to the firing, but here's a quick story. I hired someone in kind of semi-desperation as a someone to help me in making my videos. Not desperation, but like I thought he was the right guy. And, you know, I missed a few things. Long story short, this person was found out not too long after they joined me that they were missing a few critical things. And it was one of those like, you know, should I let this go and muddle along for a period of time? And I'm feeling like this is not the right person and I'm messed up. And you know what? I let them go, I don't know, 3 weeks or so into the job. And always when that happens, you're like, man, that was the right thing to do. I'm so glad I did that.
Right.
And the person that I hired to replace them was absolutely the right person on the bus.
Right. The data is super clear on this. Like, people tend to let things fester way longer than they need to. So in almost every instance, when someone is let go, the answer is never like, well, we did it too soon. We should have just done some more coaching. It's almost always, why did I do 6 months or 2 years or 10 years in some cases, you know? So,
I mean, I can give you an example of those too. I have two specific people I know that I kept on for at least 2 years that were probably giving me 20% of what I needed done in that role.
Yep.
Right. And one of them was kind of the family member issue that was like, oh, you know, we're helping this family out and, you know, they need the money, whatever, whatever. And when we finally did let them go, it was like a huge weight off.
Yeah, it's true.
And then another person that was having personal problems and a divorce and, you know, all this stuff. And they got a much better job later when they got their life back together. They actually needed a little bit of time off. We gave them a good severance, but we let that go way too long.
Totally.
And on the other hand, more than once have I let someone go in the kind of 1 week to 3 week period of time. You know, we hire slow and fire fast is kind of our motto around here. And it's always, no one's ever regretted that. You know, when you realize that you made a mistake, you got to act on that.
Okay. I want to talk about keeping people and then firing people. But before we do, I got to talk about my outfit. So this episode of Contract Revolution is sponsored by William Penn Roofing. Thank you, Sarah Moffitt, for sending this in. They specialize in roofing, siding, and gutters. They operate their business in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. They've been in Breakthrough Academy for 3 years. And here's the note I got from Sarah this morning. We were texting. In working with Breakthrough Academy, our business has grown internally by strengthening our internal structure and continued work on optimizing our systems. With the help of BTA, we recognize the need for a solid organizational framework that would lead us to fine-tune our processes and shift our focus from working in the business to working on it. The biggest thing BTA has helped us with would be our budget. Prior to BTA, we had a limited window into the financial health of our company, relying on our accountant for much of the numbers questions. Today, we have our finger on the financial pulse of the company, allowing us to make decisions with much more accurate information. Amazing. I love to hear that. Sarah, thank you for the outfit and thank you for being a member. And if you are listening and you want to check out BTA, there are links to do that below. We systemize contracting businesses for growth. I will leave it at that. All the information is pretty easy to consume on the page there linked. So anyway, back
and
to
you. I'll give you a quick plug for BTA too, real
go
quick.
Go for it. We'd love that.
A couple of our Build Show Network contributors are BTA members as well. And I actually have a couple builder friends that are BTA members, and they have all said absolutely phenomenal things about you guys. It's not very often that you find a company that has literally raving fans, and BTA is a company that has raving fans. And by the way, the raving fans are people like you in the listening audience that are people like me. And man, I wish I would have started with BTA when I started my company. Even in the first 5 years, it would have made a giant difference. And I would probably be in a very different place today had I had BTA as a trusted advisor back then. So, I mean, these guys, incredible. And of course, you guys know they're shooting videos and podcasting on a weekly basis for our Build Show Network. Super thankful to have them. Thank you, Benji.
Kind of you to say, Matt, but you wouldn't have as many funny, boneheaded stories to tell had we. So I think it all worked out fine. I'm glad we didn't find you 10 years ago. We wouldn't have all this great content.
People like me because I have a story for everything that I've done dumb, and I'm not afraid to say it or tell you all my past sins.
I know, that's why we love you. Okay, so let's talk about keeping people. Like, what is your philosophy on talent retention?
Okay, so as a general philosophy, I think that you need to pay medium to good, and you need to treat people extremely well. And let me explain that a little bit. We are not the highest paid builder in town. You know, if you kind of look at my bandwidth of what people make when they work for me, there's definitely other builders that pay more. But I think there's not many builders that take care of their people and really treat them as well as we do. We do a lot of team building activities. We typically have a team lunch every 2 weeks that we cater. Another cool thing we started doing this year that's 100% on Tim, my business partner. He said, you know, instead of buying lunch once a week or so for the crew or every other week, why don't we send our office manager to HEB, our local grocery store, and let's make sure that the office is always stocked with a loaf of bread, deli meats, some yogurt, and whatever snacks generally people like, so that at noon, no one has to leave the office, and we also don't have to pay, you know, $200 for DoorDash, let's say, and everyone who didn't bring their lunch can always know that they can make themselves a sandwich, get a bag of chips and pretzels and a yogurt or whatever healthy snack. We usually have fruit and some other stuff around. And it's so cool how actually I have two companies, well, really kind of four companies, but I have four companies that are housed in the same place. Everyone feels like they work for the same company because we all have the Bills logo on. But all these random people meet at our kitchen and have lunch together around noon. And it fosters some great conversations and great camaraderie from the guys who work for our construction team. I have five guys that do everything from digging ditches to welding awnings and making structural columns and building this or that, cleaning up trash, going to Home Depot. I have a video team that I have some people that do nothing but edit videos or do the podcast with me. I have an in-house architect. I have project managers. I have office staff. Whoever's in the office that day meets around noon and either brings their lunch or makes lunch from what we've got. And it's terrific team building. And it's an inexpensive perk, but it's absolutely a perk because people feel like if I didn't bring my lunch, I'm good to go. I don't have to go out and spend $20 on lunch. And it's such a minor deal, but it's such a big deal. The other thing that I've done is as I've gotten bigger, I had this kind of checklist of goals that I wanted as a company. One of them was healthcare. We've had healthcare now for, I don't know, 6 years maybe, or 7 years, or 8 years, I don't know. But for a long time, I was like, I can't wait to be able to afford healthcare. We were giving people an allowance for their healthcare, but we didn't have an option like it's free and you just pay a copay of $50 a month or whatever it was. And then we also didn't have company trucks for a long time, and we didn't have whatever it is, a 401k that we just started not too long ago. So I had this list of things that I felt like were really important for people to have at a good company. And one of them wasn't, you have to have the top pay of any builder in town. So I think that paying people fairly and well is important, but you don't need to be the best payer in town, but you do need to treat people really well. And then this question of retention, something that Benji and I have talked about in a previous time prior to the podcast was, you know, more than once I've had people who came to me and said, Matt, you know, I got a better offer from XYZ Builder. You know, they've offered me this bump in pay. And every once in a while I've gone up in pay, but I haven't gone past my kind of band that I'm willing to pay people at. And several times I've been like, man, you should take that opportunity. That's really fantastic. And they're like, would you pay me that? And I'm like, no, we really wouldn't. But man, I wish you the best. That's going to be fantastic. I'm excited to see where you go in the future.
I want you to unpack this idea a little bit more, Matt, because I see all too often people, I don't know if it's out of desperation. I don't know if it's just liking the person and a fear of the unknown. Am I never going to find this someone like this again? And you generally only see this with what you might call like all-star roles, like really, really solid yep. employees. You know, nobody's going to bend over backwards for someone who's a B-. But for people that are much, you know, really good team members and they do great work and their values align and all the things that you look for, I see this a lot where owners make like almost too many concessions for this high performer because it's what the high performer wants and they have career goals and financial or earnings that they want to make and development they want to receive, all that stuff. And I think it comes from a really noble place on behalf of the owner, the entrepreneur, who goes, well, say this person, say the name is Michael. We love Michael as our production manager. They're asking for a 30% pay bump and coaching in these areas. And we're going to do it because he's so awesome. But couple things happen. One, like you have to like change the shape of the organizational structure and almost like make a new node for this person or make a new role for this person. And in many cases, it's outside of the model. It's like, that's not what the business needs. It's what the person wants. And it doesn't mean that there's not necessarily like no ROI in doing that. But it is in many cases a situation where you get diminishing returns. That 30% pay bump doesn't actually get you 30% more productivity for the business. And you do one here, you do one over there. A few years goes by and you can end up with a very bloated overhead, and in some cases even some entitlement issues. So I'm sort of being long-winded here. Just, I'd love for you to unearth why your philosophy with rockstar employees is sometimes to let them go on to a greener pasture.
Two things I would say on that. Number one, I think we need to be really cautious about retaining people because of fear. And number two, I've hired several people that I knew were going to leave me. And so I said ahead of time, as long as I get X amount of years out of them, anything after that's gravy, and I'm totally fine with them leaving. So I can think of two or three people I've hired over the years that said to me some version of, hey, I really want to start my own company someday, or I really want to be my own builder. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, I think you're fantastic. I'd really like for you to come work here. And if you'll give me 3 years, I'm going to teach you and train you with everything I know. And then at the end of 3 years, if you feel like you want to do that, I'm going to absolutely open the door and say, you're awesome. Thank you for your great service. And I wish you the best. But in the meantime, I'm going to train you with everything I know. And I can think of at least maybe a half dozen people who have left me and gone on to start their own company or go on to some big VP of whatever role after they left me. We're still friends to this day. We still talk. And I was like, great. I love it, man. Great job. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm so glad that I had my time with you. But after they left, I didn't have a fear mindset. And maybe we can get in the spiritual side of things. You know, I'm a big believer in the power of prayer too. Like, all right, Lord, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but you told me not to worry about tomorrow. Yeah. Today's got enough worry. So if Jordan needs to leave, we're going to find someone who's going to be at least as good or better than Jordan. And you know what? Someone did came by and they were better.
Right. Right.
And had they not left, I wouldn't have found the better person. I can think of someone in particular who might even be a podcast listener who a really big competitor of mine, like a company 5 or 6 times bigger than mine, came to this person and they were like my key resource. This was my Michael to your name the other day that I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe Michael's got an offer. And he told me what it was. And I was like,
I can't do that.
There's no way I can't. That's more than I made, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
Like, I wish you the best. I can't believe this builder's willing to pay you that, but I wish you the best. And he's doing great at that builder. And, you know, it was a great position. But we made a key decision a couple years ago to say, look, this is the bandwidth we pay for these positions. You know, this is the general base salary. This is the general bonus. And here's the benefits. And we have, you know, there's a width in there, but I don't have persons in the same position who are making 50% more than other people in that same position. Hmm. You know, it's maybe a 15% bandwidth from the top to bottom, and that's it. And so if someone comes to me and wants a 30% pay bump, that's just not an option for us. We don't do that. And we know that generally speaking, there's going to be someone else who could do that position. And I'm not saying that to say my people are disposable. I'm just saying that, you know, we try and keep everybody fairly within that equitable band, because that's the band that we put in the forecast for how we're going to make money in it as a business, how we're going to have some money in savings so that if something terrible happens, we've got that savings, how me and my partner are going to get paid at the end of the year, how the rest of the team's going to get paid on their profit sharing. So we've stuck to that the last 5 years. And if people need to leave, they leave, and we've generally replaced them. And there's lots of good fish out there on the sea.
Is that something that you're fairly transparent and upfront about with people early on in the recruiting interviewing process? This whole management philosophy, which I think you've described really well, is that something that when somebody's looking at this, you kind of explain this approach to it so that they know as well?
Yeah, and honestly, we've been pretty honest about that in the interview process too. We'll get people who come to us and like, look, I want to make this dollar amount. We're like, man, that's out of our band. Yeah, like I really appreciate that. But if that's where you need to be, you know, we're not a great fit for you. Here's what I can tell you our band generally is. And then we offer this, 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 and this. on top of that, and we're a terrific place to work. But if that doesn't work for you, I get it. And, you know, I don't want to waste your time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, I bet you that saves you quite a bit of bandwidth. There's a hidden cost to all this, which is all the mental math you have to do every year on negotiations and comp raises and can we afford this? Well, now our overhead's up to this, but like it's forget about like even the spreadsheet or how the P&L looks. It's like mentally, it's a lot of work for an owner to kind of think that stuff through all the time. So I really appreciate you sharing those thoughts. Let's talk about so one of the things, okay, you've it's okay to let people go sometimes, but one thing that you have done with key people in your businesses is like build a leadership team. So is there anything like, I don't know, equity, profit sharing, clever, ingenious ways of doing bonuses or performance pays for the people that you are kind of like going the long haul with? What mechanisms have you used to do that? What do you think works?
I think that probably the best thing that I actually learned from a builder friend of mine, this guy, Bruce Giffen, who was in my Builder 20 Club, Bruce showed us how transparent he was with his key employees, down to the point that even his laborer knew that the company needed X amount of dollars to even fund people's vacation time to get your 2 weeks off of vacation. And he made a really great running chart of, hey, it's August. And at this point, we're real close to being able to have the money to fund everyone's vacations, but we're not there yet. And so we're hoping that by September 15th, we'll have made enough money as a company that everyone can afford their 2 week vacation. And then if we get that, then the next milestone is if we make our numbers in November, December, then people are going to get their bonuses for the year. This kind of running chart to get us to that point. And he was even more transparent than we are, frankly. He was doing that down to the labor position. We do that with our key employees. I mean, they know all the numbers. We talk about it on a monthly basis, sometimes even a weekly basis. And we're really looking at, here's how we're doing as a whole company. And so, you know, there's several key employees for us that know exactly what's happening under the covers. And I think that makes a really big difference because they know that here's how much I make. Here's how much the company makes. Here's what we're putting into reserves. Here's how much that cost us by this job slipping or by this job taking this much longer or by us saying, hey, we'll refund you this project management for these 2 months when XYZ happened, Mr. Client. I think it's really good to be transparent with, at a minimum, your really key people, which is probably something in the order of 3 to 5 people in your business. But as I mentioned, this guy, Bruce, was transparent all the way down to the labor. Now, maybe the labor didn't know how much Bruce made as a kind of take home pay as an owner of the company, but they knew absolutely where they were in terms of making their numbers for the year. And I really liked how he took that down to, look, we got to make money as a business, or we can't afford to pay you for 2 weeks of vacation. And I loved that. That in particular has always stuck to me after visiting his operation.
Now, no conversation would be complete without talking a little bit about firing people and exiting people when we have to. What is your what is your mental framework for making these often very, very difficult decisions? What are you looking for? What kind of things are you seeing or not seeing that show you, hey, this person might not be the right fit?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I've made wrong decisions on both sides. I mentioned that already. I've kept some people way too long. And I've also been really good a couple of times at saying, you know, we hired the wrong person. We need to let this person go. And I'll be honest, we varied quite a bit on, should we give this person severance? How much should we give them? How generous should we be going out the door? And that's varied a little bit. We also did hire a, what's their title? Like a labor attorney, I guess, a couple of 4 or 5 years ago to help consult on these kinds of things to make sure we were being smart about it, that we had people sign the right piece of paper when they left the door, those kinds of things. So as your company does get better, I think that that's probably a worthwhile expense, is having somebody like that you could confer with and make sure, like, am I doing everything? Am I dotting the I's and crossing the T's correctly to make sure that I'm doing something, especially as my company's gotten more, I don't know, for lack of a term, visible, that sort of thing. But I think ultimately it does come back to that old adage of the moment you think, gosh, I really need to let them go, that's the time that you need to let them go. And all the times that I've ignored that and thought, you know, this could change, this can get better, it doesn't. It hasn't gotten better. So you generally know what to do. It's following through in that. And I mentioned earlier, a lot of times it's fear. Sometimes, though, frankly, it's because you're trying to be too nice of a person. Like, gosh, if we let them go, you know, they're going to be on the street. They're going to be whatever. Their kids are going to be hungry. Guess what? You're not God to them.
Right.
You know, they need to go to God for their own daily bread and ask God to provide their own daily bread. I'm not God. They don't pray to me and say, give me Matt my daily bread. So that's actually helped me a little bit, because for the first 10 years I was in business, I probably took it a little too hard that my subcontractors and my employees were getting a check from my company that I felt like I was responsible for them. But no, you're responsible for yourself. You know, this is America or Canada. If you don't work, you don't get paid. If you don't do good work, you don't keep your job. It does frankly help that I'm in a right to work state in Texas, where I'm not quite as worried about, you know, having to let someone go. I'm not a government agency who can't fire someone. You know, if you don't do well in your job and you're not providing a positive return for the investment that I have in your salary, your income, then you're not the right person for that job. And we're not a charity. We're great employees and we really care, employers, and we care about people. I'm not saying that if you go through a divorce, you're going to get fired around here. But it does mean that if you're not keeping up with your job, if you're not the right person for that job, we're going to let you find a better job that is a better fit for you.
So once that decision gets made, as sort of arduous and painful as it is sometimes, do you have any tips for business owners to sort of muster up the courage and have the conversation and rip the Band-Aid off, so to speak, to use a metaphor? What have you found useful when it's like, okay, you know what? The data is in, the case is closed. I know what I got to do here. How would you encourage business owners to get a little more comfortable, a little more confident in having those termination conversations?
That's funny. My wife has actually been the one who's helped me in this quite a bit. She talks about this thing called executive courage. And she's been my coach behind the scenes over the years that, frankly, I've gotten better at, but have been really terrible out in the past, where she's like, look, you need to summon the executive courage to do what's right, whether that's right for the company, whether that's right for your customer, whether that's right for the overall organization. And just because it's uncomfortable for you doesn't mean you don't need to summon the courage to find what you need to find inside to do what needs done. And I kind of like that term. I don't know
so
if
that's do I.
something she made up.
Executive courage.
I really like that.
It's got a ring executive to it, and it makes sense, right? It is the courage to execute.
You need to be an executive sometimes. And, you know, as we're talking to business owners on this, you need to make the hard decisions sometimes and you follow through on them. It's not to say that I don't want someone in the room when I fire somebody, frankly, for HR reasons too. You know, if I'm firing a female, I want a female in the room as well. If I'm firing a male, I want another male in the room with me. I remember back in the day, I had to fire a guy who I knew had a concealed carry license and had a pistol in his day timer. And we made a plan at the office of how we were going to fire this guy, because I knew he had a pistol on his day timer and he carried it with him always. And it was not illegal. We were in a state that allowed that. And so I got with my executive team and said, all right, how are we going to do this? Like, I want you to look through the window. We're going to put his chair in this position and you keep an eye on the day timer. And then we're going to have these two people here in front of the day timer. And if he reaches for the day timer, here's what we're going to do. And it was a non-issue, right?
Yeah,
the guy was totally like, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
You know, he knew that he needed fired.
Yeah.
We had no problems with him. You know, we got the company truck back and all that kind of stuff. But the point was, we needed a plan and we needed more than one person involved. And I would recommend that for anybody. You know, it's sometimes a lot easier to have courage when you've got a friend in the room, someone who cares about you and the company and knows that it's also the right decision. And frankly, it's just the smart thing to do. And as I mentioned too, no one leaves here without signing a piece of paper. And if there's any type of, you get to keep this, or you get this, whatever, severance or whatever it is. No one gets that without signing this piece of paper.
I love all of these ideas, but I hate ending an episode on kind of a morbid, serious tone. So let's add some levity and talk about something that we're excited
the
about.
Firings.
Dude, tell us about Build Show Live. For I mean, many of the listeners will know about this already. I'm sure tons of you are coming. But for those who don't, this is your first in-person event, is it not?
Yeah, first. This is be like, you know, if you had tickets to the first ever Super Bowl, to the first ever Taylor Swift concert, to the first ever whatever, this is it. But I think what's really cool about this is we're on your podcast, Benji, is I know a lot of people that are BTA folks and are raving fans of BTA. This conference is for you. Mm. This is totally a conference for your people. And what's cool about it is we have a business track. In fact, BTA is going to be there teaching some of that. We also have several of our contributors are teaching that. And I can tell you some of my contributors are much wealthier, much smarter business people than I am and are much further in their career in terms of organization and their business. So we've got a full business track. We also have a great building science track. You know, if you've got younger builders, superintendents, we've got BS 101 live, you know, Build Science 101. We're going to be teaching that live. Myself, Steve Basic, all the contributors have some really, really good education. And it's also pretty dang affordable. Just the show ticket for Friday and Saturday is like $100 for a contractor. And then the education track, which is kind of happening concurrent with the trade show. There's like 120 vendors at the trade show. Plus, this is going to be very different than another trade show. We have four different stages happening that will get recorded, that will be live presentations. Those live stage presentations are part of the $100 ticket. But we have some closed door sessions that are, it's $300, I think, for a builder to attend. And then we have this thing called the VIP pass, which is like $1,200. You get to come a day early. You get to come to a pre-party. You'll get one-on-one time with me and with the other contributors. I think it's limited to 300 people for that VIP pass. So it's a pretty small select group, whereas the ticket sales is going to be like 3,000 or so. So it's a pretty small conference to begin with. And it's really geared towards builders and remodelers like you and I, like your listener, Ben.
We are going to be there in full force. I'm going. We've got four people from our team going. We're really looking forward to it. I mean, you guys do such a great job executing everything. And I think I know that you've been to enough trade shows to take all the best parts and delete yes. all the worst parts and make something exactly right. that you're really proud of. So
that's what we're working on.
We're going to
that's
Super exactly Bowl right. I in Austin. What are the dates?
November 7th is the VIP pass only, and then 8th and 9th is the trade show. It's a Friday, full day. That's going to be a super fun, super busy day. There's stuff going on Friday night, by the way, too. And then Saturday, the trade show and the education stops at like 3 o'clock. And I think at 4 o'clock is the Texas – shoot, I can't remember. UT's playing
– a big college game.
Is it? Yeah, huge college game that you could probably still get tickets to as well if you're in town. And if you've never been to a UT game, it's a super fun party. You should absolutely go if you're going to be here.
I'm going to go buy some tickets for that.
You should get on StubHub and get some
right
tickets
now.
For that. I would.
Okay, we will sure. link all the stuff to Build Show Live as well. You guys, I would honestly, I would ask you to come if you're at all inclined. I think it's going to be a phenomenal event. You get to meet Matt and his team. We'll all be there. We're yep. out of time for today. Mr. Matt Reisinger, it's always a pleasure to have you, man. Can't wait,
Benji. You guys rock, man.
Can't wait to
I
see you in November.
BTA. You guys are amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll see you in a couple weeks. Really.
Peace and love, brother. Take care.
Take care, Bye. Man.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our channel, consider sharing this episode with another contractor who you think needs to hear it.